John wasn't an idiot. He knew what Brendan was up to. He supposed it was inevitable that he'd get involved. Wherever Spencer went, Ryan was sure to follow, one way or the other. It was only a matter of time before the younger vampire grew bold enough to ask about the boy's whereabouts, but John had no intention of telling him anything. Besides, even if John did say something, what was he going to do about it? Run to Beckett? John knew Brendan well, knew that he cared more than he should, had a heart still capable of that kind of emotion. Brendan wouldn't tell, not if Spencer was better off where he was. He could still, however, be a monumental pain in the ass, so John made a point to avoid him. He fed quickly and set off for his apartments, taking care to be safe about his trip, but not wasting time by taking an overly complicated way back. He was relatively sure that he hadn't been followed, was about to step out of the alley and onto the street across from his building, when he heard the sound of cheap-soled shoes scuffing across the pavement. There were two humans moving into the alleyway behind him, coming off the opposite street. Their heads were bowed over a cloth bag held between them. They'd poke at it occasionally, and the bag would wiggle. It made them laugh. John knew what was going on. He'd seen it before more times than he could count. Pathetic human teenagers, desperate to prove how very inhuman they were, would often visit the alleyways around punk territory. It was how so very many of them ended up among their ranks. That's why John never considered the punks to be much of a threat to the dandy power system. There was no way a gang who used that as their entrance criteria could possibly grow into anything other than a group of children who delighted in pulling the wings off flies. It was easy to snap their necks and take the bag, catch it before it hit the ground. The contents wiggled again as John unwound the opening and reached inside. His fingers touched soft fur and a small body, compact but not emaciated, not injured. The boys must have stolen someone's pet then, not a stray. Of course not. Why would they actually work for their prey? John was glad they were dead. The cat was orange, with a white splotch on his nose. John lifted it out of the bag, holding it up so they were face to face. The cat stared placidly back, but his eyes were alert. John had never had a pet. Life as a human was an everyday fight for survival. There hadn't been room for anything else. It wasn't unheard of for vampires to keep animals. The butcher had allowed Siska to keep his cats. But that was more out of guilt for having so quickly stolen him away. None of the others at the dandy house had pets, though John supposed they were free to. The decision was made in a split second, but John couldn't explain why. Spencer's family had dogs, and there was nothing to suggest that he'd be grateful for anything John was willing to bring him at the moment. He dreamed about Spencer's angry face yesterday, his eyes cold and shuttered. So different than he'd been when John was moving inside him. Both times. John pushed the memories away and turned back toward his building. The cat only protested a little as John held him under his arm, frowning at the cat hair he knew would be all over his suit. The cat licked his fingers then, purring a little, and John was willing to admit that maybe there was something to having animals around after all. He nodded at the guard stationed at the front desk, knowing that much of his safety was in a human's hands, and it was a good idea to keep him happy. The elevator ride up to his apartments was spent watching the cat bat at its own reflection, and wondering why he found it amusing. In the end, he decided it didn't matter. The doors slid open and he stepped out, quickly making his way to the apartment and unlocking it. He opened the door carefully, not willing to take the chance that Spencer was on the other side. waiting to make a break for it. He wasn't, John saw as he came inside. The boy was asleep on the sofa, arms crossed over his chest to keep himself warm in the cool air from the air conditioner. There was a message in that. He wasn't willing to go back into the bedroom, or to touch the blankets on the bed. John sighed and closed the distance between them. Spencer, John said. He reached out and shook the boy's shoulder a little. He murmured quietly, trying to hold on to sleep, but the cat's tail twitching around his arm finally woke him up. The boy's eyes blinked open, sleepy and confused. It was a beautiful sight, and John couldn't help but smile a little. It didn't take long for Spencer to notice his surroundings, and for a look of contempt to mar his features. "What the fuck is that?" he demanded, gesturing to the cat that John still held. As if on cue, it meowed. "It's commonly called a cat," John replied, reminding himself to keep hold of his temper. "Though I suppose it can also be called a peace offering." He set it down on the sofa next to Spencer, who sat up and regarded it with narrowed eyes. "In those 2 weeks we spent together, you didn't actually get to know anything about me, did you?" he asked. "I mean, a fucking cat? A milkshake would have gotten you more brownie points." "Well, in that case, I'll just take this little fellow back to the boys I found him with," John said simply, scooping the cat up off the sofa and tucking it under his arm once again. He didn't seem to enjoy the sack they had him in, but I'm sure it'll all be over before he knows what's happening. He turned to leave, his movements slow and obviously intended to provoke Spencer. But the boy took the bait anyway. He scrambled to his feet and pulled the cat away from John, holding him tightly against his chest. For a moment, John felt an intense wash of jealousy that the cat was able to feel Spencer's heartbeat when he was no longer allowed that privilege. His life had gotten incredibly pathetic in the last 3 days, it seemed. "No," Spencer said, taking a step back. "Fuck you and fuck them." "Indeed," John replied. Spencer rolled his eyes and sat back down on the sofa, scratching the cat behind his ears. The animal purred loudly, flopping down on his side and demanding more attention. Spencer smiled a little, and John considered it a personal victory. "Were they really?" the boy asked after a moment. He didn't look up, but his hands curled protectively over the cat. "Yes," John said. "But they're dead, so the animal is safe. From them, at least." "You did it?" Spencer asked. He looked up briefly, but couldn't maintain eye contact. "Believe it or not, Spencer, but cruelty just for the sake of cruelty does nothing for me," John explained. "And what do you call what you've done here?" Spencer asked. John reached out then, tipped Spencer's face up so they were eye to eye. He was a little surprised that the boy didn't spit at him or jerk his face away, though his discomfort was visible. "Saving you," John replied. "Let me tell you a story, Spencer. Will you listen to it?" "Can I ask you questions after? Any questions I want?" Spencer asked. John nodded. "Just let me finish first, okay?" He waited for Spencer to nod before continuing. "There once was a boy, a sweet thing who had an easy smile and a love of music. His name was Frank, and he made the mistake of giving himself to a vampire named Gerard. Gerard, you see, wasn't one to follow rules, and he was punished for it." "What happened?" Spencer asked, either forgetting or not caring that he'd promised to keep quiet. "Frank paid the price in the end. He was turned and sent away where he was mistreated every day for 80 years, John said. And Gerard? Spencer asked. He was left to think his boy was dead, John said. All because he'd slighted William Beckett. Spencer looked at him sharply for that, but said nothing. John noticed how his arms momentarily tightened around the cat. The animal grazed Spencer's arm with his teeth to get him to loosen his grip. Frank wasn't the only one, though he might very well have been the first. I've known Beckett since he was turned, and I can't point to anyone before Gerard came to town. He's not the last, because it's happening right now, not only to you. Your dear Ryan, Spencer. You know by now that he belongs to Brendan, but do you know that he does so by choice? John waited for Spencer to look at him in disbelief, and he wasn't disappointed. He might have fought it in the beginning, but he's as stupid about Brendan as Brendan is about him. I've seen them together, Spencer murmured, eyes fixed on the carpet just beyond the toes of his sneakers. He likes to touch. Yes, he does, John said with a small smile. Ryan is a very special boy, Spencer. He's got abilities, thanks to Brendan. Brendan has claimed him publicly, shared himself with Ryan, and now your little friend is less human than he was. How? Spencer asked suspiciously. That's not for me to tell you, John replied, deflecting the question. But know that it's made Ryan a valuable asset in Beckett's eyes. He might belong to Brendan now, since he's still human, but when he's turned. And Brendan will turn him, make no mistake. He'll swear his allegiance to the leader of this city. That means Beckett will be within his rights to demand whatever he wants. It's crass, and beneath a dandy's dignity, but that won't stop him. Not if it'll teach Brendan a lesson in his behavior, and keep Ryan in line for the future. Ryan's not safe? Spencer asked. No, John replied. Brendan will do what he can, but what use is it? He's already crossed Beckett once and lost. They're far beyond the point where even I could step in. Even if Beckett hadn't taken an interest in him, there's no way I could take all of Ryan's memories of Brendan. You know from experience that even losing 2 weeks is incredibly traumatic. Brendan's been around for considerably longer than that. There's also his abilities to deal with, and that type of work can't be undone. Why didn't you just stay away from me? Spencer asked, quietly. If you knew this could happen, why didn't you walk away? Because you're you, Spencer, John said, honestly. We first met in Brewer Park. You were looking for Ryan, and you were so scared, but you refused to go home. We crossed paths earlier in the evening, and I watched you for a time. Your earnest eyes, your pounding heart. Ryan had pulled away from you. I knew this because I was asked to watch him and report back. Even back then, before his abilities became common knowledge, Beckett still found him fascinating. Mostly because he was pretty, I think. And Beckett liked the idea of contrasts. Brendan in his fine clothes, poised to live forever. And Ryan, a poor human boy with numbered days. It is poetic, don't you think? Spencer didn't answer, though he turned his body and curled up against the arm of the sofa, facing John. Later that night I saw you again, only this time you were on your knees, and one of the hoods was about to tear apart your throat. I stepped in. I didn't even think twice about it. He wasn't happy, but he gave you to me. What next? I cleaned you up and sent you home, John said with a smile. You looked at me the same way you are now, come to think of it.
You just sent me home?
Spencer asked.
Yes,
John said.
I knew I'd see you again eventually, and I didn't want you to cross paths with another vampire.
Where did we meet again? Spencer asked.
Where do you think?
John asked.
The bridge?
Yes, John said, with another smile. The first time was coincidence, but it quickly became our meeting place. You'd crawl out your bedroom window and come to me. I'd walk you home after, duck you in safe and sound.
I invited you in, Spencer said. That's how you were in my room when I got back the other day.
Yes, John said. You were so nervous about it, all wide eyes. But you trusted me in the end.
And look what it got me,
Spencer said bitterly, looking down at the cat once more. John closed the distance between them and turned Spencer's face back toward him.
Don't ever think I did this to hurt you, he said.
It doesn't matter what your intention was, Spencer said softly. It happened anyway.
I suppose it did, John said as he pulled away. He got to his feet then, sensing that the conversation wasn't about to go any farther.
You need to get Mulligan some food, Spencer said. John raised his eyebrow at the name, but Spencer's defiant gaze challenged him to say something about his choice.
Go to one of the 24-hour vets, buy the most expensive thing they have.
Of course, John said. We can't have Mulligan eating something unhealthy.
No, we can't, Spencer said.
John had the feeling he'd just been dismissed. Ordinarily, that would rankle him, but as it was, he almost found it amusing.
Buy a toy, too,
Spencer added, as John headed toward the door which led to his own apartment. Caged animals need exercise.
And there went any amusement John might have felt, along with any headway he thought he and Spencer might have made.
When Brendan was alive, he'd been the youngest of five children. He was exceptionally sneaky, good at getting what he wanted, and incredible at finding lost possessions, be they his own or someone else's. He'd always figured it came from being so tiny for so long. Even now, 20 years gone, he was on the small side, but his vampire strength helped to lessen the sting of sensitivity. He'd say he rather liked the idea of being a living, breathing example of looks can be deceiving, except that wasn't exactly true anymore, was it? The point was, he had skills, and while he hadn't felt the need to use them in quite some time, he still had them. So it was incredibly frustrating when, after 2 nights of searching, he still hadn't found anything. Maybe it shouldn't have been a surprise. Brendan wasn't that great when it came to tracking people, and Spencer was hardly a lost book. But it was irritating, regardless. On the third night, Brendan didn't even bother to search after hunting. He'd already exhausted his group of informants and spies, and trying to follow a scent that was 3 days old was impossible for anyone who wasn't Gerard Way. Instead, he headed straight for the Smith house, where he knew Ryan was still staying. He thought about Spencer's parents and shook his head. They'd be as big an obstacle as Spencer would be, Brendan knew. He'd have to take care with them. The last thing he wanted was for Ryan to turn out like Pete over something that could have been easily dealt with. The drive didn't take long, not with the way he pushed the Mercedes up past the speed limit. He parked in the driveway and hurried up the path, pushing open the door to the Smith house and leveling a long, even look at the officer who stood in the living room doorway. The human stopped speaking on his cell phone and nodded at Brendan, dropping his gaze after a moment, uncomfortable with the eye contact.
Brendan watched him for a minute more, making sure he was actually doing his job. He didn't think that the human would dare to defy the order Brendan had given him, but Brendan was hardly the most influential among the dandies, and he wouldn't put it past someone else to warn the officers off the case. Once he was satisfied that hadn't happened, the vampire turned toward the stairs. Ryan wasn't far away. Brendan could feel the pull of their connection. He allowed it to tug him upstairs, to lead him down the hall to an unfamiliar bedroom at the end of the corridor. He'd been staying in the guest room across the hall from Spencer's parents, and while Brendan had spent considerable time in that room in the last few nights, he'd not felt the need to explore the rest of the house. It wasn't difficult to guess whose room Ryan was in, and pushing open the door just confirmed it. Spencer's room was a mess of posters and CD cases, with a drum kit set up in the corner opposite the bed. A small desk sat by the window, and a basket of laundry sat on the floor next to the door. Ryan was in the bed, curled up on top of the blanket, and Brendan took a moment to admire the curve of his spine before coming into the room and closing the door. There were dark smudges beneath Ryan's eyes again, though they were nowhere near as bad as they'd been when visions of Frank's suffering had robbed Ryan of all restful sleep. Brendan sat on the edge of the bed and brushed his fingertips across one bruised eye, keeping the contact light and barely there. Ryan stirred anyway, sighing softly and shifting restlessly before opening his eyes. He rolled onto his back when he saw it was Brendan, making the vampire's fingers slide across the bridge of his nose and across the thin skin below his other eye. "Not sleeping?" Brendan asked, though it was an absurd question. The proof was right there in the tired way Ryan watched him, in the lethargic way he ran his hand down Brendan's thigh. "No," Ryan said. "I dream about him, but I'm not seeing him. Not the way I did that first night when I knew he was in the hospital. I thought maybe sleeping here would help." Brendan toyed with Ryan's hair for a moment before pulling the boy to his feet. "Come on," he said. "It's going to rain, so grab a sweater." "Did you find anything?" Ryan asked sharply, as he reached for a hooded sweatshirt that Spencer had left strewn across the back of his desk chair. "No," Brendan replied, as he tugged Ryan toward the door. He watched as Ryan shrugged into the sweater and tried not to laugh when he saw that the sleeves weren't quite long enough for the boy's arms. His bony wrists stuck out, the skin a nice contrast to the dark blue fabric. "We're just getting out of here for a while," Brendan continued. He led Ryan down the stairs, their hands tightly clasped together. Mrs. Smith looked up as they passed, an empty teacup in her hand as she made her way to the kitchen. "Be careful, boys," she said tiredly. She came over and pulled Ryan's hood up and then adjusted Brendan's hat. "It's starting to drizzle," she added, patting Brendan on the shoulder. Ryan regarded Brendan with a suspicious look, but Brendan ignored it. "Let's go," he said, tugging sharply on Ryan's hand. He could feel the boy's gaze on him as they got into the Mercedes. "What? She adores me," he said. "Because you made her," Ryan accused. "Love is love," Brendan said dismissively, and started the car. "Aren't you even worried that you'll fry someone's brain one of these days?" Ryan asked, hastily buckling his seatbelt. "No," Brendan replied honestly. He pulled away from the curb and sped away down the street. John hadn't set out to follow them, but that's what happened regardless. After Brendan parked his stolen car, he led Ryan down the darkened streets, then finally to a small park. The rain had picked up by then, and Brendan allowed himself to be dragged to a gazebo and pulled down onto one of the wooden benches inside. John took a seat at the cafe across the street, claiming a table under the hideous black-and-white striped awning. He leaned back in his uncomfortable metal chair, fixing a steady gaze on the two across the street. They were beautiful together, a study of contrasts with their two distinctive looks. Ryan should have been ridiculous in his tight jeans and t-shirt, his sloppy hooded sweatshirt and running shoes. But John could see the attraction for Brendan, the spark in the boy that the vampire found impossible to resist. How could he not? John didn't look away from the little scene when a waitress came to pester him. She was obviously new and hadn't yet learned to steer clear of the dandies and leave them in peace. Her supervisor hurried over, taking her by the hand and pulling her urgently away. He would have to better train his staff. John made a mental note to suggest that before he left. Ryan wasn't sleeping again. That much was clear, even from far away. John watched as he slumped over on the bench, leaning heavily on Brendan's shoulder as he closed his eyes in defeat. The boy was exhausted, though John supposed it was a worry-induced insomnia, rather than one caused by his visions. If he was seeing Spencer every time he closed his eyes, John had no doubt that Ryan would be in his face in an instant, demanding answers and actually expecting them. Ryan Ross didn't seem prone to fits of arrogance, not with his upbringing. But when it came to his best friend, Ryan would always have his way. It didn't hurt that he had Brendan in his corner, either. Ryan sighed, the soft sound carrying on the light breeze as he pressed himself closer to Brendan. The vampire had an arm around his boy's shoulders, his fingers tugging lightly on the hair at the nape of Ryan's neck. John could no longer see his face, and he didn't have Nate's talent for sensing emotions. But he still fancied that he could feel the waves of sadness radiating off the human. He should probably feel bad for doing that to him, if only because Ryan would soon be one of them. But John found that he didn't care enough to summon up the emotion. He had no regrets, and he saw no point in pretending that he did. He thought back to Spencer's face earlier that evening, to the shuddered look in his eyes as he'd watched John move through the apartment. There had been something on his mind, not that he'd been willing to share when John asked about it. He tried not to be all that disappointed by Spencer's refusal, telling himself that at least they were able to speak to each other again. Spencer had a gift for asking complicated questions, things John couldn't just answer with a straightforward sentence. His explanations were intricate, detailed, requiring tangents and asides so long that sometimes Spencer even forgot what the original question was. He'd watch with rapt attention, though, sometimes smile at John's jokes and offer up his own experiences if he thought they might be pertinent. Things were nowhere near right between them. Spencer had been very clear on that account. But it was something. He seems rather upset, doesn't he? John didn't bother to look over at Beckett as the younger vampire took the empty seat next to him. Quite frankly, he was surprised that it had taken Beckett 3 days to come to him, especially after the look of smug victory Beckett had given him that evening as he led Spencer away. John's eyes stayed trained on the couple across the street, focusing all his attention on the small things that made the scene so fascinating. The movement of Brendan's fingers as he stroked the back of Ryan's neck. The way Ryan's hand was fisted in the fabric of Brendan's jacket. The press of their legs together from hip to knee as they left no space between each other. It was lovely to look at. It was also the only thing keeping John's temper in check. Brendan was speaking now. Quiet words meant only for Ryan's ears. Useless words of comfort. John was suddenly possessed with the urge to go over there, to pull Ryan away and tell him that no, everything would not be okay, because John had absolutely no intention of giving Spencer back. One day, Spencer might even come to terms with that. You know how children are, John said after a moment. Probably crying over a lost lollipop. You'd think so, Beckett agreed. So many of them do. But no, that one over there really only gets upset about one thing. And that would be? John asked, keeping his voice level and even. He knew Beckett wasn't an idiot. Any attempt to play dumb would be shot down immediately. There was a fine line between being cautious in his answers and outright denying any knowledge of the subject. But John wasn't sure if Beckett would appreciate either alternative. In order to be believable, he'd have to mix enough truth in to temper the fabrications. It still wasn't smart, but John wasn't about to admit what he'd done, even though that initial reluctance was how he'd gotten himself and Spencer, fragile, mortal Spencer, into this horrible situation. If it all unraveled, there would be no appealing to reason, no explanations that would win Beckett over or make him back off from things that, though not officially his, should still rightly belong to John. He wondered if Beckett was annoyed simply because his new plaything, his joke, his game, had been taken away. Or if there'd actually been something to his pursuit of Spencer. Almost as soon as the thought struck him, it was pushed away. This was William Beckett, after all. He wasn't capable of attachment, even though he might enjoy the vague idea of it. Pete was evidence of that failed experiment. Beckett continued speaking, seemingly not noticing, or caring, about John's affected look of boredom, or the way he'd been momentarily lost in thought. And that would be? Beckett parroted back with a feigned look of surprise. Why, it would be that pretty young thing Ryan is always with. I know you did your job better than that, John. When I send you to get information, you can be trusted to actually pay attention. Please don't insult my intelligence by pretending not to know what I'm talking about. The boy with the blue eyes? Spencer? John asked casually, though it made him angry to have to speak his name in front of Beckett. Memories rose again. Their second meeting, Spencer's serious eyes. The shape of his mouth as he softly said John's name. The sweet look of concentration on his face as he wrote John's address on a sheet of paper in his math book. John viciously shoved the images down and continued to glare at Brendan's back. He was not the jealous sort, had never seen the point to it. But in that moment, with the stress of his situation with Spencer still tight in his shoulders, with Beckett sitting there just waiting to pounce, John wanted nothing more than the uncomplicated press of fingers laced together, or the trusting way that Ryan allowed himself to be led away. The boy with the blue eyes, Beckett mused, a small smile on his face. Such pretty blue eyes. You're absolutely right, John. He and dear Ryan are usually thick as thieves. I don't suppose you've heard what exactly has Ryan so upset. No, John said. They're hardly my concern, either of them. Claim him and be done with it, a voice in John's head said. Give him that small measure of protection. It sounded an awful lot like Brendan. No, John thought firmly. Let him out where Beckett can see him and bad things will happen. If there was another voice, a third one that snarled about his right to keep his possessions private, John didn't acknowledge it. "That's right," Beckett said, with a winning smile. "Because you don't have a boy, or a girl for that matter. Just a penchant for sloppy food."
"It would seem so," John said, taking care to keep his words civil. He forced himself to relax, though he was unable to let go of all the tension in his shoulders. He was confident that the mask of indifference he had spent so long crafting was firmly in place.
"He's gone missing, you know. Spencer. Such a lovely boy with a lovely mouth. I rather miss him," Beckett said sadly. "An eager little thing. So happy to learn. To please."
"I'm sure he'll turn up somewhere," John said, waving a hand in dismissal. "There are only so many places one can hide a dead body."
"Or a live one, for that matter," Beckett added.
"They never do seem to stay where you put them," John agreed with a fake smile.
"Brendan can vouch for that," Beckett said with a nod. "Kids today are such a handful. So much work, so much trouble. But worth it sometimes," John thought.
"Do let me know if you happen to stumble upon the boy," Beckett said as he stood.
"I imagine he'd like to come home." He threw something onto the little table then. Soft, well-worn blue cloth, folded small and neat. A t-shirt, one that smelled so strongly of Spencer that John's teeth ached. A reminder that Beckett had been with him, had dressed him like a doll all those nights ago. John didn't have a reply for that, but judging by the way Beckett had already started off down the street by the time John looked up, one hadn't been expected. John held the t-shirt close, fingertips digging into the soft cotton as his hand fisted around it. He stared at it for several minutes, imagining the way it would have been pulled taut across Spencer's shoulders, would have accentuated the curve of his waist. It would look lovely on him, with the color contrast and tight fit. John wanted nothing more than to see Spencer in his ridiculous clothes, faded from constant washing and so very soft against his skin. In the last 3 days, he'd seen nothing but the dark jeans and white t-shirt Spencer had grabbed when he changed out of his ruined dandywear. The clothes were entirely too new, and nothing like what Spencer had worn the previous times they'd been together. John tried to give him clothes. There were a few pieces in his wardrobe that didn't fit entirely right, but which would serve Spencer just fine. But the boy had refused to wear them. Despite the fact that the kid's clothes were disgusting after 3 days of constant wear, John was willing to admit that he was a little happy for all of Spencer's protestations. It wasn't right to see him in such formal dress. But still, the boy needed a change of clothes, and he didn't seem willing to accept anything from John, which left only one other option. He pushed his chair away from the table and tucked the t-shirt inside his overcoat as he made his way toward the sidewalk. It was raining steadily, but at least he'd dressed for the weather, unlike Brendan, who had to be drenched. John supposed it didn't matter. If he could shed his wet clothes and curl up around a warm human body for a couple of hours. John made his way toward the Smith home, taking the side streets even though it rankled him to be reduced to that. He'd never before felt the need to lurk, to hide as though he had no right being wherever he so chose to be. He told himself that it was a necessary evil, that he would do his best to avoid being seen by other dandies, who would no doubt run back to Beckett. There was also the issue of Brendan and his boy, who was apparently staying with Spencer's family. John didn't think Brendan would take Ryan home so early in the evening, but he wasn't going to take a chance that they'd stayed in the neighborhood. It didn't take long for John to find himself standing in the backyard, looking in at the darkened windows. It wasn't all that late, but the lights were out, and everyone inside seemed to be sleeping. But John wouldn't let his guard down even then. He made short work of climbing the trellis, raising the sash of Spencer's window and slipping into the room. The first thing he noticed was the strong smell of Ryan in the room and the messy blankets on the bed. A slim brown wallet. It had to be Ryan's, since Spencer's was black. Lay on the bedside table. He probably hadn't gone far if he'd left that behind, which meant that John's time was limited. He looked around the cluttered room and caught sight of the book bag that Spencer had dropped near the desk. It was the work of a moment to dump out the contents and kick the notebooks under the bed where no one would see them. After that came the hard part. Spencer was feeling contrary enough that John knew he'd make a fuss over what he brought back. Either the clothes wouldn't fit right, they'd be too old, or be something, God forbid, that his mother bought. John saw that there was a laundry basket near the door, overflowing with neatly folded clothing, and he began grabbing things at random and shoving them into the bag. All of it was soft and worn, much like the shirt still tucked into his overcoat. So they must have been Spencer's favorite pieces. If nothing else, it might provide some sort of comfort. When the bag was full, John slowly drew the zipper up, careful not to break it when it strained. He took one last look around the room, trying to decide if he should bring anything else. There were several things that caught his eye. The stereo, the CDs, the drum kit. But he couldn't carry those on his own, not this time. He'd come back another night, he decided as he slipped out the window, dropping silently to the ground. John slung the bag over his shoulder as he set off down the street, taking care to avoid the puddles. The rain was tapering off, and John breathed deeply, enjoying the damp, earthy smell. He'd always enjoyed the rain, even when he'd been a human. Spencer hated it. It reminded him too much of being on the ground, Travis's boot connecting painfully with his kidney. John was about to pull up the memory when he realized he was no longer alone. He continued down the street for several more minutes, making sure that he was, indeed, being followed. There was no sense in making a scene unless he had to. There were two of them. Humans, though John could smell the distinct sharpness that told him they were dandies regardless. There were only three hunters who were dandy marked, which told John immediately who was tailing him. Pete's little pets should have known better than to approach him, but if they needed to be taught a lesson, John had no problem with that. He dropped the bag from his shoulder and turned to the left, where he knew the hunters were hiding just out of his line of sight. "If you were going for stealth, you've failed miserably," John called. "Might as well come out. I have places to be and I'd rather not be late." "Going to night school?" one of the hunters asked as he stepped onto the sidewalk. "Because the backpack doesn't quite go with your look." "Which one are you?" John asked, intending to draw the hunter's attention away from the bag and who might have actually owned it. He knew perfectly well who he was addressing. Andy with his ink and Joe with his hair. But he couldn't resist the taunt. "Joseph or Andrew? I doubt either of you is Patrick. There's no way Pete is about to let him out of his sight. No self-respecting dandy would put his boy in danger, after all."
"Shut the fuck up," Joe hissed.
"Eloquent," John remarked. "Such a way with words." "You never answered the question," Andy said, cutting Joe off before he could reply.
You bloodsuckers are very good at distracting people, but I don't think I've ever seen a dandy use that to steal a kid's school bag before.
We're just full of surprises, John said with a smile.
You are,
Andy continued.
No one else is surprising? A missing person the cops actually care about.
John was confident that his carefully blank expression betrayed nothing, but he knew the hunters wouldn't buy his indifference. They were observant, he'd give them that. Maybe there was a reason Pete kept them around after all. To tell the truth, John himself had been surprised when he first noticed the police presence at the Smith house, though it hadn't taken him long to realize it was Brendan's doing. It made him angry at first, though the feeling had faded a little over time. If Brendan had the police looking for Spencer, it probably meant that it hadn't occurred to him to link John to the boy's disappearance. Of course, all that could have been wishful thinking on John's part. It might have been done simply to shut Ryan up. It seemed like the kind of gesture that Brendan would engage in.
Well now, one would assume that there's some sort of quota, John replied casually. They can't spend all their time working for us. That would be unscrupulous. Humans are notorious for their need to excuse their behavior.
Yeah, well, you'll excuse me if I don't believe you, Joe said.
Well, that certainly is your prerogative, John replied.
Now, if you're quite finished, I actually do have somewhere to be. Are we going to stand here all night, or are you going to take this opportunity to go back to Pete in one piece?
He put the seriousness of the situation into his tone, making it very clear that he was not in the mood to play. If they attacked him, he wasn't about to pull his punches just because Beckett wanted to keep Pete somewhat happy.
No, Joe said simply.
That was all the warning he gave before both he and Andy surged forward, pulling weapons from battered scabbards. Andy had a sword. An honest-to-God motherfucking sword! How over the top was that? And by the way he handled it, John knew he was more than capable with it. Joe had a knife in one hand and a stake in the other, the sharpened bit of wood held close to his body as he made to stab at John's shoulder with the knife. He missed, just barely, the blade tearing into the wool of John's overcoat as the vampire twisted away. John shoved the hunter with all his strength, and Joe took two staggering steps backward before hitting the ground hard. The scent of blood and torn skin was strong in the air, but John put it out of his mind as he watched both hunters with wary eyes. Joe was getting back to his feet, his fingers going white as he gripped his weapons tighter. Andy was grinning next to him, swinging his sword in what was meant to be a menacing manner. John was more impatient than intimidated. He watched them for a few moments more, before advancing himself, landing several punches to soft, painful areas, and forcing the hunters to take several more steps backward. It wasn't long before they surged forward again, moving in practiced motions, working together as a team. John had some difficulty in deflecting both sets of blows, and quickly came to a decision. He'd have to get rid of one of the hunters, even if it allowed the other to make some gains while his attention was focused elsewhere. John turned toward Joe, rushing him, sidestepping the knife and grabbing the hand which held the stake. It was easy to twist the arm back, to pull it up until he heard the bone snap and the accompanying cry of pain. The vampire swept the hunter's legs out from under him then, leveling a vicious kick to his hip, the force of which saw the human roll across the asphalt. It all happened in less than a few seconds, but it was enough time for Andy's sword to come down, its sharp blade slicing effortlessly through the layers of John's overcoat and suit, cutting deeply between his ribs. John hissed in pain, his eyes flashing ferally as he jumped back. The look on the hunter's face was triumphant,
and John turned that happiness against him, using a burst of adrenaline to circle around Andy's side and rake his nails over Andy's sword arm, digging them into the artery near his elbow. Andy howled, but he didn't let go of his sword. John didn't care. All he'd wanted was a distraction, something to keep Andy from wielding the weapon with so much precision. His mission accomplished, he backed out of range and quickly picked up the bag he'd dropped earlier. With one last burst of strength, he disappeared down the street, confident that the hunters wouldn't try to follow. Spencer's favorite hobby during the last 3 days of his captivity, as he was calling it, capital letter and all, was to sprawl on the couch with Mulligan and order every pay-per-view movie on all 5 specialty channels that John had set up for him. He didn't watch any of them, only charged them to John's account. Part of him wished he could see the vampire's face when he got the bill at the end of the month, even if it meant he was still stuck in the apartment. He was in the middle of ordering a chick flick when he heard John spring the lock on the apartment door. Dropping the remote to the couch, Spencer sat up and set the cat on the floor. The vampire was moving slowly as he came inside, but Spencer's attention was focused on the black backpack that dangled from his hand. At first, he thought it was nothing more than a coincidence. Maybe John had found one like his. But no. There were his initials, written in whiteout on the left strap. "You brought me my homework?" Spencer asked incredulously, getting to his feet. "No," John said, pressing the bag into Spencer's arms and quietly making his way toward the bathroom. Spencer eased the zipper open and peeked inside. He didn't know what he'd expected, but it certainly wasn't to find his favorite clothes shoved inside. Spencer looked from the bag to the open bathroom door, his mouth working, but no sound coming out. "Why?" he wanted to ask. Would John just point out that Spencer was still wearing the same clothes? That he was no doubt starting to reek, even to a human sense of smell? Or would he have another answer? One that would get him talking for long minutes about something trivial that would still have Spencer hanging on every word. Would he get to see that look on John's face? The one that he got every time he mentioned something the two of them had done together? Spencer bit his lip and put down the bag, slowly making his way toward the bathroom. He was trying to figure out what to say when he caught sight of the blood. "Jesus fuck, what happened?" he exclaimed, eyes wide as he took in the bloody clothes on the floor and the gaping wound in John's side. The vampire had one arm up over his head as he tried to see the extent of the damage. Spencer darted forward, pulling his arm down. "You're making it worse," he said. "What happened?" "I met up with 2 hunters after I left your house," John replied tersely. His jaw was tense as he met Spencer's eyes in the mirror. "They weren't friendly." Spencer bit back his response and reached for one of the big fluffy bath towels that were folded neatly over the rack near the shower. There were 3 of them, none of which had been used. Along with not changing clothes, Spencer had refused to shower, deciding that if John wanted him, he'd have to put up with the smell. He pressed the towel to John's wound, wincing as the vampire drew in a sharp breath. It wasn't long before he bled through the towel, and Spencer was reaching for another. This one didn't soak through, though it did stain quite a bit. "Will you be okay?" Spencer asked quietly after a few minutes, when the silence became a little too much to bear. "Yes," John said, his fingers playing over the back of Spencer's hand as he reached for the towel and pulled it away. The wound still bled a little, but Spencer could see that it was already starting to knit itself back together, the blood clotting along the shallower edges of the cut. "I'll be fine in a day or so," I just need to feed and to sleep," he added after a moment, pressing the towel firmly in place again. He set Spencer away from him and sidestepped the bloody mess on the floor, leaving the bathroom to head toward the door behind the bookcase.
"Where are you going?"
Spencer asked, running along behind him. His fingers closed over John's wrist before he even realized what he was doing. But once they were there, he couldn't make himself let go. John looked from Spencer's hand to his face and back again, before repeating slowly,
"I need to feed. I'll heal faster, and I can hardly go out like this."
"But..." Spencer trailed off for a moment.
"Is it safe? For me or for them?"
John asked sharply. Okay, maybe that was fair, Spencer thought. He'd hardly been all that cordial, though there had been times when John's voice, the images he painted with words he chose, had left Spencer spellbound and more than agreeable. Those moments left him confused afterward. But when they were happening, Spencer felt very free. Happy. Had he felt that way all the time before? Spencer didn't know, but he wanted to. Maybe that desire alone could be enough for him to let go of some of his anger.
"For you,"
Spencer said finally, his voice soft. John fixed him with a long look before saying, voice equally quiet, "Probably not." Spencer went quiet then, eyes fixed on the carpet for long moments while he turned the idea around in his head. It was stupid. So very, very stupid. But he didn't see what other choice he had. John was hurt. Going out would be dangerous. Even from a survival aspect, Spencer would have to do it. If John got himself killed, who would feed him or let him out of the goddamn apartment? Of course, there were other reasons. The thrill of desire he still sometimes felt. The remembered feeling of John's mouth near his neck from the other night. The memory of the strength in that body. The way he'd touched Spencer in all the right places. Spencer tried not to make his decision based solely on that. His hand came up to touch his throat, and he slowly raised his eyes.
"You did it before, didn't you?"
he asked. Sometimes he thought he could feel the sharp sting of broken skin, though the sensation was nowhere near as strong as that of fingers down his arm, or a caress to the back of his neck. Those phantom touches had disappeared after he'd spent time in John's bed, but the pressure of teeth on his throat hadn't.
"Yes,"
John said. His eyes were trained on Spencer's fingers, on the pulse point he kept rubbing at.
"So you don't have to take too much then, right?"
Spencer's voice was a little unsteady as he spoke, and it made him want to scowl. He felt like an idiot. What kind of person offered something but sounded terrified when he did? He knew full well that this was a very adult thing to be doing, and the last thing he wanted was to sound like a frightened child. "No," John said, his voice gentle.
"Does it hurt?"
He felt his face grow warm as the question slipped out. And he ducked his head. John's hand came up and cupped his jaw, tipping it up so Spencer had no choice but to look him in the eye. He tried not to think about the bloodstains on John's fingertips.
"It doesn't have to," he said. "I can make it good for you."
"Okay," Spencer said after a moment. John smiled, though the expression was tight around his eyes, and Spencer allowed himself to be led to the bedroom. He hadn't been in there since that one time with John, But he tried to put that out of his mind as John tugged him down onto the edge of the bed. "Relax," John said softly as he leaned in. "It'll be so good." Spencer closed his eyes as John's lips pressed against his throat. He expected the sharp sting of teeth right away, but the vampire just brushed his mouth against the artery, dragging his lips across the thin skin there. He kissed it then, tongue darting out to quickly taste. Spencer was reminded of how gross he must be, and he tried to pull away.
"Shh, don't worry," John told him. "Just close your eyes and feel."
Spencer did as he asked, focusing on the pressure of John's thigh against his, the soothing touch of John's hands against the tense muscles in his back, and the feel of John's mouth, kissing and sucking small bruises into the pale skin of Spencer's throat. The boy tilted his head back to give him more room. He could feel John's laugh, but found he couldn't summon up any annoyance at that. Couldn't think of anything at all when John sucked particularly hard on his neck and made a sign of appreciation low in his throat. Spencer was pliant in the vampire's arms when he felt the pressure of teeth. The bite was quick, the teeth sharp enough that Spencer didn't recognize the flash of pain right away. Not until John's tongue flicked out and pressed against the torn skin. He gasped a little, but John's soothing hands were back, rubbing circles on his sides, calming him down. He didn't suck at the wound, just let the blood well up, swallowing as his mouth filled. Spencer let out a little gasp as he felt the muscles in John's throat working, heard the soft, happy sounds the vampire was making. "Please," Spencer said, though he wasn't entirely sure what he was asking for. His hands tightened on John's shoulders, but he didn't try to push him away. John seemed to know what he wanted, holding him tightly as he leaned Spencer back onto the bed, fitting his body along the boy's side. This was better, infinitely better, with so much contact between them. It wasn't long before things started to go a little gray around the edges, and Spencer realized how lightheaded he was. He moaned a little then, patting at John's shoulder. He could feel John's tongue lapping at the wound, prodding it, making it bleed faster. "John!"
"It's okay," John said,
his mouth moving against Spencer's neck.
"I won't take much more."
He sucked hard, something that made Spencer groan. It hurt so much. The pain cut through the pleasant fog he was floating in, and his fingers tightened around John's shoulder. He felt the vampire's tongue make broad strokes across the wound, but it felt weird, wetter somehow. His skin itched, much the way torn skin did when it was healing.
"Is that better?" John murmured.
Was all the reply Spencer could give. He looked up at John from under his lashes and saw the vampire smiling down at him.
"Take a nap with me," John said.
Spencer nodded. Like he could do anything other than curl up against John's side anyway.